first of all, ask what they understand and listen for sure. And then do your best to stay out of the technical language and simplify and put it into plain English.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok.
My guest today is Gary Simmons. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Gary. One, he is a neurosurgeon who created and ran the neurosurgery program at the Virginia Tech Carilion School of Medicine. Two, he has written three nonfiction books and a recently released novel focusing on professional burnout and building personal resilience. And three, Gary plays the guitar and banjo, and he's currently teaching himself the bagpipes. We could have had a whole concert here today. Gary, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thank you so much for having me, George. It's a honor and a pleasure.
Delighted to be talking with you. And I'm especially delighted to be talking with you as a neurosurgeon because we're not discussing my brain today.
We can if you want.
That might be a very short discussion or just simply weird. Gary, as a neurosurgeon, you not only learn the skill of neurosurgery and medicine, we want you to be good at that, but you also had to learn the language of neurosurgery so that you can communicate with your colleagues, but sometimes there's a disruption when you now try to speak to common people, your patients, to explain the neurosurgery. How did you address that challenge for you? How did you get over, oh, I'm a neurosurgeon, got to speak like a neurosurgeon, can't talk, people talk?
Yeah, George, I mean, you're 100% correct. As a matter of fact, you kind of learn two additional languages. One is you learn a language when you're in med school, which is general medicine, and it's all language. I used to give tours of the med school and say to the prospective students, the biggest challenge is learning the language and being able to communicate like a physician. But then when you go into especially like neurosurgery, it very much is a whole nother language of neuroscience and surgery and that sort of thing. And so you're immersed in this stuff. And it really is very important when it comes to communicating with your colleagues. You have to be able to communicate fairly rapidly and efficiently. And it works best if you use the language of your specialty. But the problem is, you then, you know, you have your intended messages that you want to get across to your patients who haven't gone through 4 years of medical school, 7 years of residency training, years and years of experience in the specialty. And you have to be able to translate all of that back into normal conversational English. And if you think about it, I'd ask you, George, you know, what's it like to feel like to be with a doctor who's speaking nothing but their specialty language? I call it medicalese.
Now, when it has happened, it makes me feel like they are being arrogant, that they're talking down to me. I speak down to you from my mountain. Listen to my talk.
Yeah, I think there is some ego stroking in there, maybe not intentionally, but you know, you've become part of the club, if you will, and therefore, you know, when you get to speak that language, it probably fills you with importance or something like that. But it does nothing for the patient. In fact, you know, it can really infuriate patients and make them feel insignificant and like you're not really communicating with them. So, you know, how did I come about using a different language. I think through just experience, they don't really teach you to do this, but you begin to realize what patients respond to and what patients don't respond to. And so you could come in. I've heard colleagues come in and say something like, you know, I'm sorry, sir, but you have a glioblastoma in your brain, and we propose a gross total resection. Recurrence is likely due to diffuse microscopic residua in the resection bed. So we're going to use adjunctive palliative and chemotherapy and radiation therapy. And you can lose the patient very, very quickly in that. And they really didn't even hear a word. So what I was just talking about is a very common tumor in the brain. And what I would say to a patient, after years of seeing what they respond to best, I would say something like, sir, you do have a brain tumor. These tumors are somewhat akin to a weed, if you will, within the brain. I can go and physically take out the main plant part, but there are going to be roots left over, roots that I can't chase because I'll badly damage the brain. And therefore, we're going to have to try to use various types of root killers, if you will, which would be chemotherapy and radiation therapy. And I find that patients much better understand what I'm talking about and much more appreciate that I'm breaking it down to that type of language.
And Gary, and naturally my eyes glazed over when you gave the first message, but the second one, you immediately grabbed me because one, you were speaking to me, words I understood, tumor, cancer, roots, weeds, roots, weed killer. I understood all of that. And I came away feeling more confident in you when not only did I understand it, but I also felt more confident in your hands because you could talk to me, you could communicate to me. And so it wasn't simply me understanding, but it was also me feeling more confident about the outcome and listening to your advice. And what a difference that makes.
It's a wonderful point, George. And again, it gets back down to, we all go into every conversation that we have, at least professionally, with our intended messages. And we want those messages to get across to our counterparts. But if we break into technical language and they are not at the same level of technical sophistication and they're not in our job, they're not going to understand it, and they're going to feel like a wall has been thrown up between us. So their confidence in us, their trust in us, their belief in us is all in many ways blocked. And I don't think this is just in medicine. I think it goes across any profession that you can name. I think, you know, when lawyers start talking to me, sometimes I am completely lost. Frankly, when a mechanic talks to me about my car, I can get completely lost. And so I think in almost any industry, almost any profession, if we revert to the jargon, if you will, or the vernacular or whatever you want to call it, of our industry, all that specialty language, all the eponyms, all the abbreviations, we lose our audience immediately.
Mm. And the other point I noticed too, you used an analogy to reach me. An analogy that I could understand, and it simplified the words, the context, and yet I did not feel that you were talking down to me, even though you simplified the message into words I can use. And that in itself is significant, because now I felt we were on a kind of like an equal basis.
Yeah, I would completely agree with you. I think about somebody like Winston Churchill, who was supposed to be one of the great communicators and orators. And he talked about using short words and old words, ones that everybody understands. But he also said, use images, create images in your audience's mind, so that even if it is a highly complex topic or a highly fraught topic, that your audience can see it. They can actually see something more tangible, more palpable within their imaginations. And then it starts to make sense. And I agree with you. I don't think it's talking down to somebody. It should be our job when relaying something very complex to simplify it, to teach what it means and what the components are. And you can always adjust your complexity if you're taking note of your audience. I always start, frankly, when I'm talking to patients about something, I always start with asking them, what do they understand is going on? And if they can relate to me what they do understand so far, I get a very quick read on their level of what I would call medical sophistication. And again, this isn't pejorative. It's they haven't gone to medical school. They may not have ever read an article on this, even online. And so I can get a sense of what they do and what they don't understand. And that allows me to hone my intended message much more cleanly for them. And what do I need to fill in? What do I not need to fill in?
Gary, that was invaluable advice there. Before you start or at the beginning of the conversation, ask the other person, what is your understanding of what's happening here, of what's going on? How do you understand it? And that could happen in any context of a conversation, especially where there's a technical nature. Ask the other person where they are at from their perspective. And now you know where to start.
Yeah, I 100% agree, George. And I think the other component of that is listen to them as well. You know, don't just do it. I do think by asking, you do bring them in. You make them feel part of it. I think it increases their confidence level. But you also got to listen. You got to really register what they're saying. And they may have different needs. I've been in this position many times, where their needs, their concerns may not be completely aligned with your intended message. Therefore, you may have to adjust what you're going to tell them. You certainly want to get your intended message out, but if it doesn't address their immediate concerns or their immediate questions, they may still leave the conversation feeling unsatisfied. So you also have to be able to figure out what they're looking for and give that to them in addition to whatever your intended message is. Does that sound right to you?
Gary, very much so. And I think about that conflict happens in many conversations when a supplier is talking to a customer, when they're presenting their plan for how their product or their service will work. They're using the language from inside their company or their industry, and yet they're selling to someone who might be only loosely related to the industry and certainly from a different company. And I think about through my own corporate career, I remember every time I started a new job, one of the first things that I did, and for some reason this thrilled me at the time, mm-hmm. was learn the lingo, learn how to speak like the people in there. So now you felt part of the club. And yet the lingo, the code that we spoke in the club, made it efficient within the organization, but it made it difficult if we use that language with people from outside the organization, especially customers.
Absolutely. And I think there's a corollary to that. It is very worthwhile when you're speaking to somebody who's at your level of technical sophistication or understanding. But you even within your own industry, you have to be careful because, for example, in medicine, me talking to a cardiologist, we both have to break the concepts down for each other. I don't understand everything the cardiologist tells me, and they're not going to understand everything I tell them if we just blurt it out in our specialty language. So, you know, even within your own industry, you have to take into account, what does this person understand about the topic at hand, our intended message, the topic at hand?
And that's an interesting point, Gary, because it's easy to think, well, you're all in the medical profession. You all speak the same language, right? No.
Exactly.
Different specialties. And I imagine one of the first steps, and tell me if this is what you went through or if this makes sense to you, one of the first steps is to is to get rid of the ego, saying, well, you know, I know so much. I went to school for 100 years, and so I'm going to use what I learned. Well, yeah, apply it, but you don't have to beat me up with it. So when did you come to that point that you realized you weren't getting through to the patients?
Yeah, I think you have to watch the patient's responses. I really believe in it's important for the med schools, for example, to take people who are good at speaking with other people, who have had a social life, if you will. And it's counterintuitive in some ways, because most people going into medicine have spent much of their time in libraries studying. But I think you need to get out to a few cocktail parties and a few football games and remember how to speak with people in normal conversational lingo rather than reverting to these languages. And I also think you have to be somewhat brave when you're talking to people in that these languages, these technical languages, allow us to kind of cover up our knowledge gaps when we don't know what's going on. And again, I can see this happening in any industry, but in medicine, it's real easy. You know, if you don't know for sure what's going on, you can just babble away in the medicalese, and they're not gonna necessarily know that you don't know anything. You're just dazzling them, in other words, with BS. Whereas I think you have to be able to, if you're talking about plain English, I think you also have to be able to say, I don't know right now. I'm gonna work on it. And I don't know. But when did this click into me? I don't know. I think what happens is, again, if you make it a point to yourself to remind yourself that you gotta ask what they understand and you gotta listen, it starts to become evident pretty quickly what works and what doesn't work. But if you're gonna sit high above and you know, they have to come up to my level, then you'll never get it. You know, if you just go into it and never appreciate, never take into account what is getting in and what is not getting in. I think it also helps after delivering your intended message to ask them specifically, what do you understand about what I've been telling you? What do you understand about the problem right now or the issue right now? And you can be really shocked sometimes because you may think, I've just made it as clear as can be. And they come back with something that is in no way close to what your message was. So then you're going to have to refine it and readdress it and repeat it.
And Gary, I can see that similar scenario playing out in a meeting room in a company. Perhaps the president of the company or maybe the VP of engineering has come in and explained a project or a problem, and simply believe that because they explained it for themselves that everyone in the room understands. And perhaps that's a good time to go to the room and saying, who here would like to tell me what your understanding is of what I just said? And if anyone's brave enough to go and say that, then that leader might find that they didn't get across their message.
I absolutely think so. You have to have been in those scenarios, haven't you, George?
Very much so, yes. And there are times, and I admit there were times when I was reluctant to speak up because I didn't want to be the only person that I thought who didn't understand.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to say, I didn't understand, please explain that to me, because you're the junior guy.
Right. And you don't want to be the one person. And yet you look around the room and you notice that nobody else is getting it. We would have that interface with some frequency ourselves in the medical world, believe it or not, because we interfaced with the administrators quite a bit. And so we are working in two disciplines. The medical people would be there with the business people and trying to figure out, you know, how do you keep this hospital running? And the business people would be talking their language and we'd be speaking our language. And quite often, you know, people would be there nodding as if everybody understood. You would leave the room and they'd go, what the heck did they just tell us?
Mm-hmm. And Gary, when you started pointing out this conflict of intended messages, of messages to your colleagues, how did they react to you? Did they immediately get it, or did they go, "Oh, I don't know. I'm just doing." Like, what kind of reactions did you get, and how were you able to persuade them to be a little bit more understanding?
I think in general, luckily enough, I was in a profession where people really wanted to be good for their patients, wanted to do their best for their patients. And so there's already a willingness to do whatever they need to do. And I think sometimes just pointing it out really shocks a lot of people I never thought of that. You're in a rush. It's a very busy world. You're in a rush. You break into these lingos and you're not even thinking, because you know, if you're talking to me, it'll all make sense. I get it. And we can move on. But you forget that the audience may not be picking it up quite as readily or readily at all. And so in some ways, it wasn't that hard when you would just say, "Hey, do you ever find yourself breaking into medical ease or breaking into these lingos?" And when you give some examples, like the one I gave you before about talking about a brain tumor, people all of a sudden, you can see it dawn on them that, "Oh, wow, yeah, I wonder how often I do that." So sometimes just giving the message and allowing it to sink in a little bit went a long way. I never got a lot of pushback about these talks. I think there's a corollary talk that I often give, and it's how to give bad news, because we give a lot of bad news. And I think nobody's comfortable with that. It's a horrible feeling. It's a horrible experience for everybody. And so people want to do it better. They want ideas. They want things that they can practice and think about. And so I think at least I was lucky enough to have very open audiences who really wanted to improve and do better with it. So I think it was an easier job for me, you know, out of sheer luck of what profession I was in.
And so the first step is that the experts need to be aware of their audience and care about them.
Absolutely. But I can see it in every industry. If you're in sales, I mean, at the very least, you want to make your sales, right? But I mean, basically, every service industry or even sales industry, you want to make a happy customer. Unhappy customers are not good no matter what, right? And so I think everybody is oriented to having people leave the interactions positively rather than negatively.
So it's likely that it's not that people don't care in general, it's simply that they're simply not aware.
I think a lot of it is awareness. And I think all of us in every industry and in our society are going a mile a minute. We're multitasking. We have found through experience that this language is very efficient when we're with our coworkers. But we sometimes, again, I think we just drop into it. It's just easy. As a matter of fact, it takes upfront energy if you're going to translate it, because you have to stop and think, wait a minute, how do I go from my language to conversational language to plain English to make this understandable? So now you got to stop. You got to put in some effort to make the translation, as opposed to if I'm just going to use my own language, my technical language, it'll roll right off my tongue. I've been doing it for decades, right?
And so the path of least resistance is speaking the code that you've learned, because you've studied hard to do that. And in the translating process, let's go back to an idea you mentioned earlier that you borrowed from Churchill about finding an image, find imagery for your message. So perhaps when it's time to translate, ask oneself, what does this look like that these people would understand? What are they used to? What would this look like if I use an image that they can connect to? So look for that imagery.
Agreed. And, you know, you may even paint the picture yourself at first and think about, well, would this work? Would that work? And as I said, I've gone through several different types of imagery for various types of diseases. And after thousands of encounters, there are certain ones I've seen have worked really well. And then I tend to stick with those. But I think also, you know, when you're making these images, I think using things like analogies and similes go a long way. I found, frankly, that a lot of cliches work well. I think the cliches work well in the imagery, but I also think cliches work well in just creating a bond between you and the person you're conversing in, because they're cliches for a reason. They've worked traditionally, and the person knows the cliche, you know the cliche. It works real easy to make that connection. And there's a corollary to this, George, that I would advise for any sort of more complex communication or a crucial communication or one where critical information is going to be imparted. I don't believe in going into those cold. I believe in stepping aside somewhere, step into a closet or something, if you're on your way to this conversation, and take a minute and think, what exactly, you know, are my intended messages? What exactly do I want to get across? How am I best going to get those across? You may even, in that closet, say your analogy, create your image, hear your own words hang in the air for a second and see if they feel like they work. But going in cold, I think, is another way that we sometimes get into trouble, because we begin to realize, oh, maybe I don't have all the answers. Oh, I haven't really clarified this for myself. Well, I'll just slip into the technical language and nobody will know.
And that's I believe a common mistake that a lot of business leaders make, thinking, well, I don't have time to rehearse, prepare. I know my stuff. I'll just go there and just speak on my feet, think on my feet. And the reality is they know their stuff, but they don't know the audience.
Yeah, that is a great point. It's a great point, because I've done it to myself many times. I've been doing this for decades. I know my stuff back to front. I can wing this one. And whenever I do that is when I really step into things.
I like your analogy of stepping into a closet and whether it's a real closet or a metaphorical closet, but just taking that closet time to actually think through what you want to say and then say it out loud to see how it comes off your lips. Because sometimes we think we can say something, and then once we start speaking, our lips just go.
Exactly. Or you're hearing it from yourself out there in the air and you go, oh my gosh, that does not sound good. That may offend somebody or whatever. And it is funny how in your mind, certain things can seem so good. And then once it's out in the air, it can be totally different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know there's many times when I have got an idea in my head, and in my head, it seems brilliant and perfect. And then I try to put it in a place and, ooh, it wasn't so brilliant after all.
Exactly.
I think the message for people here is we communicate mostly with words, and if the words aren't understood, we're not communicating, and we need to change.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of the time, if we are using the high-end language of our industries, of our specialties or whatever, we're going to lose people. We're not going to be on top of it for everybody. So I think we constantly need to be thinking about adjusting our language to the audience level of sophistication, as we said, but also to remember to their needs. We got to assess their needs. I also think, you know, there's other things that we need to think about when we're trying to get our intended message out. I think we need to slow down at times. I think sometimes we just are going to blurt it. particularly the more fraught it is, the more we just want to get it over with and get it out there. But I think we need to slow it down and let it be digested. I think we have to remember to stay on theme, because sometimes we can end up babbling, you know, going off in various side channels, what we think might be interesting anecdotes, which have no relationship to our message or the audience needs as well. So I think there are many things that we can do to make these messages more digestible. Another one is, again, it's one of these things of reading your audience. If you're going along and you can tell, or you can check off with them that they're getting it, you can keep going on. But you don't want to just plow through your message if they're sitting there with vacant eyes. It goes back to the boardroom that you were talking about. You know, the CEO's up there going away, and you can see people's eyes sometimes just, you know, completely blank out. And if they're not reading the room, if they're not appreciating the audience's response, they're going to lose that message. That message might as well not even been put out there.
And Gary, what advice do you have to the receiver, the listener, the audience sitting there in the room, whether it's a neurosurgeon talking to them or whether it's their CEO or the engineer? What do you suggest they might say when they don't understand?
Yeah, I think in the ideal world, we would point out politely that we don't understand the concept coming across, or could you rephrase that? Or you could even say something to the effect of, can we check that I'm getting this correctly? Because I don't want to get it wrong for you, sir or ma'am. Here's how I understand it, and maybe present the issue that way. But we're awfully polite as human beings. We tend to be very polite. We think we're insulting somebody if we don't get what they're trying to tell us. So we're somehow worried about our jobs or our position or our egos or whatever. But I think you're right. In most good situations, at least in a good workplace situation, leaders are going to appreciate somebody who says, wait a minute, I don't quite understand this. Here's my perception. Am I getting this wrong? I think that the leader would very much, or the person imparting the information would very much appreciate that. It's interesting, through the years in medicine, I can't tell you how many times a patient has told me, coming in the middle of the night to the ER, has told me, oh, you're the first doctor who's talked to me, when I know there's half a dozen that have already talked to them. And I think it's, again, because people blast through the message without really registering what the patients are saying. But it is the few and far between patient who does turn it around and says, hey, doc, I don't get it. Could you go over that again? There's just so much, I don't know, interference between the two stations that people just feel like they can't say that. And that's a crime. It's unfortunate. It's so unfortunate. A patient, they're the customer. They have all the right in the world to say, explain that again. I don't get it. And call us out on it. But it is rare when that happens.
Mm. And Gary, you just reminded me of an incident recently where I took my dad in for a medical appointment, and the nurse sat down with us and explained and talked and asked some questions and explained and used an analogy to explain the nature of the healing that would be required. And both my dad and I left that room thinking, wow, that person is special. I wish there was more like that. It made a difference.
And if you were able to estimate, what sort of percentage would you put on of your interfaces with the medical world who have spoken to you like that, as opposed to broken off into medical ease?
Oh, geez. Percentage. A very low percentage. This one was exceptional, no question. And that's why it stood out. And both my dad and I remarked about it after we left. And we said that person was wonderful. And what a difference. And yet there's so many times when I've gone from a medical appointment thinking they're just spewing. They're just spewing. They're not talking to me. I'm just a patient on a piece of paper, not a person. And we need to treat people like people more. Gary, before we wrap up, people who are interested to learn more about you, your books, and what you do, they can find at the website. That's GarySimmons.com. And Simmons is S-I-M-O-N-D-S. And you can find that link in the description below.
Great. And one thing, I'm sorry, George, it's Gary R. Simmons. Just to...
good point. Thank you for pointing that out. And I left it out. There we go. Gary R. Simmons. Yes. And yes, I made that mistake. Gary, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader, whether it's a CEO or a head of a technical division, or even a sales rep selling technical services, if you could give them one, two, or three pieces of advice to make their messages more clear and meaningful to their audiences, what might be that one, two, or three pieces of advice? Perhaps it's something you've said already.
Oh, I think it does go back to what we said. I think, first of all, ask what they understand and listen for sure. And then do your best to stay out of the technical language and simplify and put it into plain English.
Clear enough. And gee, I could understand that clearly. Gary, my guest today is Gary Simmons, reminding you to create images in the mind of your audience.
If you like what you heard, tell your friends and post your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because that helps more listeners find us. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.